Blog Talk Radio.
We're still in practice mode.
Good
this
morning,
meeting is
good
being
morning,
recorded.
Good
you
morning.
Have joined the meeting
this
as an attendee
is the
and will be muted
mastermind
throughout the meeting.
Show. My name is Galen Bingham. I'm a leadership strategist, and I'm one of the co-hosts today, and this is going to be... Okay, I'll say it again. This is going to be an amazing show. Every week, we come to you, and we share an element of this classic book by Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich, and we have a conversation with one of our friends, one of our community members, and that's going to be the case today as we hear from and speak with Ms. Sandy Weaver, amazing person. She knows a lot about a lot. So you definitely want to be a part of this conversation. But it is a conversation. So I want to bring in my co-host. I would love to have this conversation one-on-one with Sandy, but I got to share airtime with some amazing co-hosts. So I want to start with Ms. Ursula Odom. Ursula, welcome to the conversation. Share a little bit about yourself and why you're excited to be part of this conversation in particular.
Good morning. And yes, I am excited. And I'm Ursula Odom, CEO of Tool 2, and we make old, new, and everything we do. And we love pulling stories together. And today promises to be a wonderful one because our guest is exciting. And I can't wait to hear her connection to Thinking Grow Rich.
Fantastic. Well, this is actually one of my favorite topics, the subconscious mind. I've been doing a lot of study on the subconscious mind myself. And one person who is one of our co-hosts who also has a passion and deep knowledge about the subconscious mind is Dr. Peter James. So Dr. Peter, come on into the conversation. Share a little bit about you and your connection and passion for the subconscious mind.
Thank you so much, Galen. I was actually going to get a little nervous if it was just going to be you and Sandy having a conversation. So I'm glad you brought other people in for sure. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Dr. Peter James. I am the high performance coach, allowing you to shift your mindset. I'm excited today because we are diving into this subconscious mind. And I think Sandy's going to be a great guest today who's going to allow us to think differently. And I think that's very important, especially in 2020 and beyond.
Welcome to the conversation. And, you know, our fearless leader, Ms. Ann McNeil, I get tired of talking about you to almost everyone I speak with and the work that I do. You have really been the cornerstone of this Think and Grow Rich movement that so many of us are part of. Welcome to the conversation and share a little bit about yourself and why you believe the subconscious mind is so important for us to talk about right now.
Well, Galen, I will briefly say Ann McNeil, the master wealth builder, helping to build wealthier businesses and lives. And the subconscious mind is the connecting link, not just to the conscious, but also to the infinite. And so I'm excited to talk about that today with a new friend, actually from Video Rockstars. So good morning, Sandy. We're excited to have you here with us today.
Thank you, Anne.
All right. Well, Sandy, you're family now. You've gotten the official handshake. You know where all the sauce is kept. So come on into the conversation. But I want to give you just kind of a bit of an introduction because I understand that you believe that you've hit the parent Powerball lottery when Ray and Ellen Weaver brought you home from the hospital because they knew the importance of teaching their three kids how to create happiness. And you've been doing the same thing with your friends, your coworkers, your clients, and your career has been in major market radio. You have always put a happy face on wherever you showed up, not because you had to, because you knew how to. And so we're just really excited that you're going to be able to share with us how to leverage the subconscious mind and how do we leverage this part of Napoleon Hill's classic formula. So with that, I just want to welcome you into the conversation and just share, give the audience a little bit more of your bio and why, of all the books that you could latch on to, why this particular book seems to be a cornerstone of how you show up.
Wow, okay. Is this a really good place to tell you that the first 100 times I tried to read Think and Grow Rich, I didn't like it, and I couldn't get through it. I just couldn't get through the book. People kept telling me what a good book it was, what a great roadmap for life it was, and I kept picking it up and reading the chapter, two chapters, and putting it down. It just didn't resonate. And finally, a friend that I believe you know quite well, Pegeen suggested that I try the women's version, so Think and Grow Rich for Women, and I read that one, and it's like, okay, I get it. I get the message, and it's good, and I can read it, and it still doesn't quite resonate, but it's okay. I got the information, and I understood from my work that I do with people, which includes neuroscience and neuroplasticity and positive psychology, I understood how all the key elements in Think and Grow Rich really work in real life. And then Pegeen suggested that I get this version of the book, which is the original version. It's the original version. And this version rocks. This version is the version. This is when people ask me, you know, there's like 88 different versions. I link them to this version on Amazon. Like, don't get anything else. Start here. Because this is what it was meant to be. And this is, okay, I was almost going to say a bad word right there, but this is the shizzle, okay? This is the stuff right here.
Well, fantastic. Well, okay, so you read the book. You get an understanding of what the content is. You then find this version of the book that we've all been reading, and you just decide this is the cornerstone of everything that I've been looking for. Tell us about the journey. How has this book transitioned from being just a really good book to something that there might be some life principles that you'd want to not only live by but recommend to others? How did it become more than just a book?
Well, anytime you sit down with a book and you hit it with a highlighter, now mine's not like Anne's is. Mine is not falling apart yet, but it will be soon. I just love the way that it's laid out, the 13 principles, the appendixes. Don't stop before you've read everything. Read the end notes. Read everything in this book because there's wisdom everywhere. But the way that it's laid out in 13 principles and one builds on the next lets you really understand a process for success. And Napoleon Hill, as you guys talk about all the time, Napoleon Hill didn't make all this up. He interviewed ridiculously successful people. So if you want to be ridiculously successful, the principles are in here. And if you want to understand it really well, this is the version of the book to get. The original version, restored and revised, fully annotated and indexed. This one.
Okay. All right. Perfect. So let's go back just a little bit because I'd love to share with the audience just a little bit more about you. You know, the work that you do. How did you come to, you know, of all the things that you could focus on, happiness seems like a pretty broad topic. Or how did you decide this place, this space that you wanted to focus on? Tell us a little bit more about you.
Well, as you said, I did hit the parent Powerball lottery. They were amazing. My parents, Ray and Eileen, decided that they weren't going to babysit children for 18 years. They wanted to raise functional adults. And they were very intentional about that. And one of the things, looking back, is I realized that my grandpa Weaver may never have read Think and Grow Rich, but he lived his life by those principles. And my mom may never have read Think and Grow Rich. Now, they may have, and I just don't know it. But she lived by those principles and taught those principles. And my dad with the help of my mom, taught those principles to my brothers and me. And so a lot of what we are steeped in is the positivity and the can-do spirit that's in this book. So fast forward a few years, I worked in radio for a very long time. And in 2008, I decided it was time to do something else for the next part of my life. And I started working with speakers. And I thought, this is going to be really cool. I'm going to work with speakers. And the more I spent time around speakers, it's like, no, I don't want to work with speakers. I want to be them. And so I kind of morphed again. And in all of the different aspects of my life, I can look at this book and see where I used a principle, even without knowing that the principle existed. It's kind of fun to look back and see just how things work out and to realize that the stuff that mom said and the stuff that dad, he didn't really as much talk about it, but he demonstrated through the way he led his life that these principles.
Fantastic. Sounds like we've had some similar experience with our upbringing. Can you think of or share one or two examples of where your parents may have done some things, knowingly or unknowingly, that really did link to not only Thinking Go Rich, but possibly even the subconscious mind content of Thinking Go Rich? Are there a couple of examples you could share?
Probably at least one. It was interesting because her mother was 180 degrees opposite of mom. So mom was very, very, very conscious of the words that she used and made sure that she never belittled my brothers and me. People would say to her, butter wouldn't melt in her mouth, and that really probably was true. Her mother was completely the opposite. So mom was very intentional in the way that she talked to us and the way that she approached being a parent. And watching that and knowing who her mother was, it took me a lot of years to really realize what she was doing. But that demonstration of intentionality was very powerful, very powerful. And then she also was really good at derailing negative thoughts. My dad was career military, so we moved a lot. We moved a lot. Sometimes we moved 8 months after we'd moved again. So my brothers and I had a lot of adjusting to do when we'd change schools and change neighborhoods and change friends. And this is in the days before Facebook and email, as you can tell. And so it was hard to keep in touch with old friends. And so it was just make new friends or don't have any friends at all. So we got really good at that. And mom was very good at keeping us focused moving forward. She was very good at helping us not dwell on what we lost, but look at the adventure that we had in front of us. And that kind of mindset is all over Think and Grow Rich. It's all over this book. So when I finally could read the book, it's like, wow, mom was living this, and I don't even know that she knew that.
Right. Yeah. One of the things that you and I were talking about is our shared passion for neuroscience, neuroplasticity, and how the brain works. So before I bring in my other co-hosts, I'd love for you to just share how science really kind of supports some of the things that this book outlines relative to how the brain, the subconscious mind in particular, how it actually works, because we still don't know a whole lot about the subconscious mind. So I would love to get your thoughts here.
So this is where I'm going to just give a shout out to Ann McNeil and her newsletter that came out this week because it was so perfectly timed. I looked at it and said, well, thank you, Ann, for giving me a talking topic on Saturday morning. I appreciate you. She sent out a newsletter that talked about how our brain has 60,000 thoughts a day and only 3,000 of them are conscious thoughts. And that proportion is just about right. Our brain spends a lot of time talking to us. We've got this little voice inside our head that talks to us. And a lot of times, it doesn't say very nice things. And if you just thought to yourself, well, I don't have a little voice inside my head. That was a little voice inside your head talking to you. We all have that voice inside our head. And sometimes, it's saying things that it heard as a child. And the brain heard it and put it away and then brings it back out later and reminds you of things that you heard as a child that really imprinted you deeply. So a story, and this is not a good story about my dad, but I'm going to tell you in his defense, he did not know that I could hear. I was 7 and wanted ballet lessons, and I really wanted ballet lessons. And we were not a well-to-do family. My brothers and I didn't know that, but finances were pretty tight. And I heard my parents talking one night after we were all supposed to be in bed and asleep. I heard my parents talking about ballet lessons, and Mom was trying to convince Dad that there was some way that we could make that work. And Dad was trying to convince Mom that there just wasn't the money for ballet lessons. And finally he said, she does not need to take dance lessons. She is too clumsy to be a ballerina. I just heard one time with my ears, my idol, my father, call me clumsy. Now, I believed him. I must be clumsy because he wouldn't have said it, right? All he was doing, I didn't know it at the time, but he was just trying to find a way to save face and not say that he couldn't afford ballet lessons for his daughter. One time, my ears heard that word. Every time the thought that I couldn't take ballet lessons with my friends, every time that thought came up in my mind, I heard my father say the word clumsy in my brain over and over and over and over again until for years I believed I was clumsy. Now, Galen, here's where we get to geek out, because here's how that works. Inside the brain, there are little bodies called synapses. And when you have a thought, two synapses that are close together open up and they shoot little messenger packets at each other. And when the messenger packets connect, that's when the thought happens. And as soon as the thought happens, the messenger packets start going back into their synapses and the synapses close. The more times you have that very same thought, the more times those two synapses open up, shoot packets at each other. And here's the key. When the synapses close back up, there are a few messenger packets left running loose between them. And eventually, when you've had that thought often enough, the messenger packets connect those two synapses even when they're closed. When that happens, that's when a thought stops being just a thought and it becomes a belief. Those synapses are connected by the little straggler messenger packets even when they're closed. So you believe that you're clumsy, whether it's really real or not. I was really good at riding horses. Clumsy people can't do that. I rode all around a paddock the first time I rode bareback on a bucking horse, and I stayed on. Clumsy people can't do that. And yet I still believed I was clumsy until I discovered it's my favorite tool. And my favorite tool, that's how beliefs are formed. So if you want to kill a belief, one of the best ways to kill a belief is to use a mental stop sign. You find yourself thinking a thought that's not serving you, like, Sandy, you're so clumsy. Well, that's not serving me, especially if I get ready to walk across a stage, you know, if we ever have those kind of meetings ever again. When I get ready to walk across the stage, it does not serve me very well to think of myself as a clumsy person. So you put up a mental stop sign and you think something else, because right here at the very beginning of the connecting link, the 11th step to riches, the subconscious mind, positive and negative emotions cannot occupy the mind at the same time. One must dominate. That's the quote at the beginning of this chapter. So the mental stop sign, you have to pay attention, but you have this mental stop sign. You put it in front of your face. It doesn't matter where you look. The stop sign stays right there. And you think about something else. And if you're really kind of in a bad place and you can't think about something else, sing a song, because you cannot think bad thoughts and sing at the same time. And I'm a bad singer, so sometimes I'm singing inside my head.
I love it. I love it. You know, I've done some studying with Daniel Goleman, and he's got nothing on you, so thank you for that. So I want to bring in my co-host and just have a conversation. Before I do that, I'm going to ask Ursula Odom. If Ursula, would you take us through, because Sandy mentioned, that this is just one of the steps. This is part of an entire system. Would you take us through all of the 13 steps so that our audience can see how the subconscious mind fits into this entire success formula?
Sure. It begins with the introduction, and in the introduction it says thoughts are things, and that's what we've been hearing so far already. Chapter 1 says desire, and basically what that is how bad do you want it? You have to want something. You have to desire it. And then faith. If you don't believe it, your brain won't believe it either. Is the visualization and the belief in the attainment of desire. 3, auto-suggestion. You're taking control of your subconscious mind. Self-administered stimuli. Chapter 4, specialized knowledge. And like I say, you have to use what you got to get what you want, meaning that there are things that you know. Organize and use that knowledge. 5, imagination. It's the freedom to dream and to create. It's the workshop of the mind. 6, organized planning is the crystallization of desire into action. 7, decision. Lead, follow, or get out of the way. Decide. Don't procrastinate. That puts you out of your misery. You have to decide. All else depends on it. 8, persistence. Hang in there. Success is coming because you're doing all the things that you're supposed to do simply by being here. That's one of them. 9, power of the mastermind is the driving force. Persistence creates faith. Faith produces power, and power is essential for success in the accumulation of money. 10, the mastery of sex transmutation. Chase your dreams like you chase the love of your life. Yeah, we all stop on that one. Okay. Step 11, the subconscious mind. What and whose words are rolling around in the back of your head? Connecting. Okay. The subconscious mind is whose words are rolling around the back of your head and saying those things that will stop you in a moment like this and all those things I was thinking just this moment. Okay, I'm putting up a mental stop. They are gone. Chapter 12, the brain, the broadcasting and receiving station of thought. And 13 is the sixth sense, the door to the temple of wisdom. The step through which infinite intelligence may and will communicate voluntarily without any effort from or demands by the individual. There you have it.
All right. Well, thank you for that, Ursula. So, I want to bring in my co-host to have this conversation. Ursula, what questions do you have for Sandy? Because I could certainly have this conversation one-on-one for the next 25, 35 minutes easily. What questions do you have?
Well, I have a couple of questions, but she has touched on so many things for me. When you talked about beliefs being there and you're not being aware of it, just recently I became aware that my successful corporate career, where I thought I was doing things that were so out of the ordinary and I had never read or heard anything about Think and Grow Rich, actually came and was supported by the fact that my grandfather was legally blind, and they would send him talking books, and guess what they were? Napoleon Hill and Earl Nightingale. I found that out because I started looking for something to binge watch, and I heard those words, and I went, ah, that's them. So as a child, I was listening to them in the backwoods of Georgia, not supported by any adult in that conversation. I was supported and loved tremendously by my family, and they had all kinds of positive things, but those particular words came from those voices, from the little vinyl things that were going around as Earls.
Wow.
So when you say you don't even know, it's like that's one of those moments. But my question goes to meditation, though. You talked about being able to meditate at one point, I guess before the show.
So I want to know, does that really work? Does it shift your perspective? And why is it that some of us, and I include myself in that because I often want to meditate, can't seem to do it, don't seem to know how to do it?
That little voice inside your head is so used to talking. And in meditation, the whole point is to shut it up. And it's tough to make it shut up. It really is. So, yeah. So a lot of times the meditation works for mind and body. And this is not some woo-woo thing. And it's not something that's against religions. Every major religion has meditative practices. Every single one has meditative practices. The idea of calming things down so that you can connect more deeply with yourself and with your source, whatever you choose to call your source, is ages old. And it's a fabulous thing to do, and it's a difficult thing to do. So it's one of those things, it's like learning to brush your teeth. You know, you're a kid, you don't want to brush your teeth. Well, you finally learn how to brush your teeth, and then you just do it automatically. It's the same thing. It's you just make yourself sit down quietly for 15 minutes a day. And when you first start, maybe it won't be 15, maybe it'll be 7, and it's a guided meditation. So you've got a voice that you're listening to that's outside your head that's painting a picture for you that you can follow. That's a great way to get started meditating. But the whole reason to meditate is to make that little voice be quiet for a while so that you can connect very deeply to who you are and who your source is. It's very, very good for your physical body, too. It's not just good for your mental body. It's good for your physical body because when you can get in control of what's going on in your brain and slow it down, you stop the stress hormone flood in your body. You stop the tension and the anxiety in your body. There have been research studies done over and over and over again. Mayo Clinic, National Institutes of Health, which is the government agency that studies everything, and man, when they say something works, they've really studied it. And meditation can help you be less susceptible to a heart attack or a stroke. It can lower your blood pressure, lowers anxiety. For a lot of people, one study that was done in California, even it took students, two populations of students, and for 6 weeks, one set of the students was told, just go about your business. Don't worry about it. Don't worry. You know, just do whatever you normally do. And the other set of students was told to connect intentionally to one person each day and to meditate every day. And oh, did I mention, both populations of students were diagnosed with anxiety and were on anti-anxiety medication. This population of students that just went about their business, they took a personality profile before and after, nothing changed. This population of students who were asked just to connect with one person intentionally every day, just have a conversation, it can be on the phone, it can be in person, it can be a FaceTime, it doesn't matter, connect with one person intentionally every day and just do a check-in and meditate every day. Most of these people could at least lower their anxiety medication. Some of them got off of their anxiety medication just because of the connection and because of meditating. So meditating is really good for your brain. It helps you calm down. It helps you slow down. It helps you connect with who you are and be more intentional and more in the moment. But it's also good for your body. So there are really a lot of great reasons to meditate, and it's just start. You know, it's just start and try. It can be difficult to make this little guy be quiet. And it's really, really worth it because then you get control of your thoughts. And when you're having those 60,000 thoughts a day and only 3,000 of them are conscious, guess what the other 57 are telling you about yourself? The things that hurt you when you were a child, the things that you heard a lot that weren't necessarily positive, because our brain has a negativity bias and it holds on to negative things and it takes even benign things and puts a negative spin on them. That's what those 57,000 thoughts are. So meditation helps you calm that down and get more control so that maybe you can have 10,000 conscious good thoughts to counteract those 50,000 not so good ones.
So Anne always talks about there are no accidents. And you just said something that is a life lesson for you by Sula too that I uploaded this week about connecting to the source.
Uh-huh.
And what motivated that was the fact that I pulled out of a bag that I put some plants that I wanted to dry to make herbs out of, Spanish oregano.
Mm-hmm.
And it had been there for like a month. And I opened the bag up and it was half done. And I was disappointed. I thought it was a failure. And I separated the dried ones and crushed them up and put them away. And then I realized what I was looking at. The stems were still alive and they were growing. And I couldn't believe it. It was like, oh my God, just hang in there and hang on to the source and you'll have life until the light comes and saves you. So I couldn't throw those things away. I pulled them out and put them in water and they're now sprouting roots.
And so next year you'll get to do this all again.
Yeah. So hanging in there, staying connected to the source, because those stems were the source of life for that plant.
Yep. Absolutely. What a great story. What a great experience, too, and a great life lesson.
And I'm going to re-listen to what you just said about staying connected to the source in meditation, because apparently, according to Anne, that's the message I need to hear today.
Well, hey, you know, I want to bring in Dr. Peter James, but we've got so many comments on social media, both here in the Zoom chat session as well as on Facebook. Blog Talk Radio as well. Valencia Gibbs, she's just so excited about this conversation. She was excited to hear how important words are, an example of how words that you hear get embedded into your brain as a child. There's a question from Catherine Woodhouse, who is both of those ladies are always with us. She says, you know, parent interjections to children are laden with children's emotions. And Thinking Grow Rich talks about how strong emotions amplify the subconscious mind. So it just kind of intensifies those thoughts. And so just you're connecting all over the place. So thank you for that. Dr. Peter, you're also one of those brain geeks as well, mindset geeks. What do you have for Sandy?
Yeah, thank you so much, Galen. Sandy, this has been phenomenal. It got me thinking. I got some notes here. Going back to even your journey overall, I know Catherine in the chat, she asked a question that actually is in regards to Think and Grow Rich, which talks a lot about auto-suggestion, another chapter, of course. But her question is quite insightful. It asks, does auto-suggestion work more deeply when it's from your parents, especially in light of your clumsy conversation or the clumsy verbiage that you heard from your father? What are your thoughts on that?
I think that Catherine is onto something there.
Mm.
A lot of times what we believe about ourselves is what we heard when we were children from our parents, our caregivers, the adults in our life that we really loved and cared about. And that's part of what Think and Grow Rich talks to, that the emotional connection is very strong and it helps embed words for better or worse very deeply. Yeah. So as an adult, as you're looking at something, so, you know, I was in my 20s before I realized, hey, look, I can walk and chew gum at the same time. Clearly, I am not as clumsy as I think I am. I was teaching people how to do the Latin hustle and looked at myself one day and went, wait, I can do this. Why do I think I'm clumsy? And so it made me question that.
Yeah.
A lot of times as adults, we don't question. We don't question those emotional feelings that are connected with words that we heard when we were a child. And we should. Excuse me, I just should on you. And I didn't mean to do that. You shouldn't even should on yourself. And I just did a big, long connection of that. Should is one of those words that like the words that we hear when we're a child, they're a little bit coercive. They're trying to get you to do something. They're a little bit manipulative. So a lot of the words that we take in and own are not just words that we heard, but they were words that were used in order to shape our behavior. And sometimes they were good and sometimes they weren't. It just depends on the kind of parent that you had. And in defense of my father, I don't know if I said this, he would never have said that if he knew I could hear,
right?
Because he didn't believe it. But You can use that, the synapse thing, you can use that. You can use affirmations. You can use your own emotion to create a different mindset. So taking all the things that science knows about the way the brain works and what you now know about the way the brain works, you can reprogram that silly voice that talks to you. You can take affirmations, but you can't just say the affirmation and not believe it. You have to believe it and feel it. So when you believe it and feel it, then you're starting to reprogram your subconscious mind to say, hey, I'm not a clumsy person anymore. I am graceful and I flow. And so my favorite way, if you like doing affirmations and you really want to change your inner voice and your inner feelings about things, my favorite way to do an affirmation is standing in front of a mirror. So I've got mine taped on my mirror and I put my fingers on my throat and I say the affirmation out loud. So I am watching myself say it, I'm hearing myself say it, and I'm feeling myself say it.
Mm.
And that, if it gives you goosebumps when you do that, you've just connected with your unconscious mind. You've connected with your subconscious. You have told yourself a truth. And the more often you can do the same thing, the more likely that truth becomes embedded and becomes what this little voice starts saying. Because you've used the same emotion and you've used all of your senses to stick it in there.
That's good stuff, Sandy. You actually have addressed a few questions that are in the chat from Catherine and Valencia. And you know, thank you all for chiming in on this. I want to follow up that last one, Sandy, if you don't mind. Galen, hopefully you don't mind if I inject another question. Especially from a speaking perspective, I love the tools that you've already let us know that you have applied for your own benefit in order to shift the mindset, to address your subconscious thinking. What other things do you use, tools, to really create that favorable mindset, especially from a speaker perspective? I know oftentimes when we get up in front of an audience, obviously not, maybe now it's in, get up in front of Zoom, what are the things that you're doing now to address their subconscious, to eliminate the negative thoughts in your mind?
Thank you, Peter. That's a great question. The mental stop sign is very powerful. If you have a thought about yourself that's not serving you, observe your mind thinking that thought. So that sounds a little woo-woo, but you have to catch yourself in the thought for the mental stop sign to work. So you have to get in the habit of paying attention to what you're thinking and realizing that some of those thoughts aren't really yours. They were programmed into you when you were a child, but they're not really how you feel about yourself. They're just what you heard about yourself. And they may or may not be true. It's sort of like this example. The sun rises in the east and sets in the west, right? Well, that's not true. That is not true. The sun is in the center of the universe or our solar system, and the earth goes around it and spins on its orbit. The sun doesn't move, but we believe that it rises in the east and sets in the west because we've heard it our whole life. So those kind of things, just look at and go, well, yeah, that's not right. So when you think a thought about yourself, use the mental stop sign. Meditation every morning, 5 to 15 minutes. Start at 5 and build up. But just the goal is to just be quiet and give yourself that space and that grace to be calm. And then in the middle of the day when something goes wrong, because it always does, you can't always stop and say, okay, I'm going to meditate for 15 minutes and get control of myself again. And you can't always put up the mental stop sign and sing a song inside your head if you're in the middle of a meeting. So if you're having one of those moments, then just find three good things. Find three good things. And there are always three good things, no matter how bad something is. So from my life, I am a dog person. I love dogs. I love dog sports. I have dogs. I compete with my dogs in confirmation and obedience and rally and agility and barn hunt and canine musical freestyle, which is dancing with your dog. I've done all of those pursuits. And I was at a dog show one time and accidentally left the crate door open on one of my dogs. And I went to the ring, it's an outdoor show. She's in the car and I thought she was safely in her crate and she wasn't. And somebody said, Sandy, your dog is running loose and she's headed for the highway. Well, that is an emergency. That's one of those moments. And you could easily freak out. And I did freak out for a moment. And then I remembered three good things. Thing number one, she's running towards the highway, and she's going to have to go over the fence or around the fence before she gets hit by a car. So, okay, that's one good thing. Thing number two, she is surrounded by sensible dog people. Nobody's going to chase her. So she's going to run for a while and then maybe get tired. And thing number three, she hadn't had breakfast yet. So I poured her kibble into a stainless steel bowl and I shook the bowl and her head whipped around and she came running right back to me. So you can fix anything. That's a big, gross example. But even if you're in the middle of something that's not going well, find three good things. Our brain has a negativity bias. It wants to go down the negative road. The way that you can stay present and the way that you can access your source to come up with the solution is to look for the positives. Look for what might work. Leave yourself open to what might work. Just being able to do that, and I do it with a three good things, or it might be one good thing, or if it's a really bad thing, you might need to find seven good things, whatever number you like. I like three because it helps me sort of brainstorm with myself.
Well, my inner geek is going crazy here because while I was listening to you, I kept hearing the words of Viktor Frankl, who wrote Man's Search of Meaning, where he says, in between stimuli and response, there's a space. And in that space is our power to choose our response.
And that's where the three good things tool works. Oh, yes.
Beautiful,
yep.
Beautiful.
That's exactly there.
So, Ann McNeil, please come into the conversation. What questions do you have for Sandy? This has been an incredible conversation so far.
I am seldom tempted not to say anything.
Uh-oh, I've made her speechless.
Oh, my goodness. Which means I have too much to say. Wow. Andy, this has been phenomenal. And you really are helping me to better understand my daily date with myself. I wrote this journal, published a book entitled My Daily Date with Myself. And many of the things you mentioned is the reason why I did that, so that I would have a daily ritual. It started with 15 minutes, then went to 30, then went to an hour, then went to more. I'll just leave it at that. But I want to go back to something you said about the synapse. You helped me also to understand why I have a mastermind group called McNeil Factor Clarity Mastermind, and we basically focus on the self-confidence formula. So we're like about 4 months in of writing, repeating, audibly saying it every day. And now I have a better understanding based upon the example you gave why many of us that are actually doing the exercise are beginning to slowly see a rise in the self-confidence.
Yep.
And I want to go back to the point of the auto-suggestion chapter is so closely tied to the subconscious mind chapter and the two principles. Now I understand better, okay, why that's so, because of the repetition and the power of that. So my question for you centers around, why do you think Napoleon Hill, and really your thoughts around the writing of this book, and what do you think the real power is? What are your thoughts on that? Because I see so many similarities between what you're saying and what he's written.
I think the real magic of this book, or the real astonishment of this book, is the fact that before neuroscience, before they could do functional MRIs and watch the brain work, which is how they figured out the synapse thing, before any of that, this book was written. And research is just proving that what's in this book is true. It really does work. But Napoleon Hill didn't have any of that. He had great minds and great successful people that he could interview and try to figure it out. I just believe that he was seriously connected to his source and was bringing in this information 100 years, not quite 100 years, but 80 years clearly, before science caught up. The true power of this book, and especially the auto-suggestion as it relates to the subconscious mind and the synapses, knowing how that works, that's a brain hack. That just lets you hack your brain, and you take auto-suggestion and you take the subconscious mind, and Napoleon Hill was all about being very intentional with your thought process. He laid out what looks like an action plan, but when you really break it down, what it is hacking your thought process and being very intentional, very, very intentional with your thoughts. So now, with knowing how the synapses work and how ideas and thoughts and beliefs happen in your brain, now you know how to be intentional.
Now, you just brought up my next question, which centers around what are the beliefs? I mean, what are not the beliefs, but what are beliefs and how do they work?
Well, beliefs are things like the sun rises in the east and sets in the west. Beliefs are only synapses that have opened up enough times that they've left a trail of messenger packets between them. That's all a belief is. It doesn't mean that it's a true thing unless you let it be true in your life. For almost 20 years, I believed I was clumsy. And so for me, that became real because I thought I was clumsy. I wouldn't go out for sports because I was too clumsy to play sports. I didn't want to go to the dance if a boy asked me to go to the dance because I was clearly too clumsy to dance. And I didn't, you know, there were a lot of things I didn't let myself do because I thought I was clumsy. It became my reality. And then I realized, wait, I can do some things like walk and chew gum and I don't fall down. So maybe I'm really not clumsy. So I questioned that belief. That was long before we knew about synapses and beliefs. And I realized that belief was not really real. So we believe a lot of things just because the synapses have fired. Mm-hmm. And the mental stop sign, when you stop continuing to think that same thought that doesn't serve you, the mental stop sign will help those synapses not fire. And eventually, all those little messenger packets just kind of fade away, which means the belief fades away too. I know I'm not clumsy. I am standing here in high heels, and I have not fallen down yet.
I see Galen is shaking his head up and down. I just want to just wrap up with this. You know, listening to you brings to mind something Shakespeare said, and we've heard it often, which is nothing is either good or bad. It is our thinking that makes it so. Mm-hmm. And so that, to me, just kind of puts a bow on this. We have the choice and the free will to choose if that thought can be converted into something positive.
That's exactly right.
Thank you.
I'd like to enter the conversation here because of the understanding of your love for animals. I happen to believe that the subconscious mind causes you to send clues to your animals that they begin to control their world by reading you and the messages that you send. So what life lessons can we get from being associated with the animals that we have in our care?
That is a great question, Ursula. And it has a bunch of answers, and depending on how long you have, I have a story that illustrates a big aha for me that goes back to a question that Galen asked right at the beginning. What is this whole thing about happiness? Why am I so fascinated with happiness? Well, first of all, you know, research says that happier people achieve more success. And my goal when I work with my clients is to help them be successful. So the first thing I have to do is help them increase their level of happiness. Dogs make me happy. Dogs make me so happy. And Ursula, you shared that the cat that you've had for 12 years makes you so happy. Animals stay in the present. So they give us a really good example of being in the present moment. But even more than that, I learned a lesson from one of my dogs almost 20 years ago that taught me that we pick things up. I was showing one of my dogs in an outdoor show, and as we were in the ring, the skies opened up. And this particular dog hated to get her feet wet. And so as soon as we hit the wet grass, she moved like a cat with tape on her paws. Every single foot went a different direction. It was horrible. And the judge laughed at her and let us do the down and back underneath the tent where the grass was still dry, but we still had to go around the ring. And so I'm going to harken back to my seven-year-old self again. When I was a kid, I loved to play in the rain because I loved to stomp in the puddles and watch the water fly and see how far I could make it fly. So I figured, got to run around in this pouring rain. I'm going to get wet anyway, so I may as well have fun. And I knew what Bonnie was going to do. It was going to look like this, and the judge was going to laugh at us, and we weren't going to win. And I figured, I'm just going to have fun. And about two-thirds of the way around the ring, I realized Bonnie was moving beautifully. The only time, literally, in her life, the only time that she ever didn't protest feet in wet grass was that day at the dog show. And the only difference, I am convinced the only difference, was because I was having fun, and she felt it. So she decided to have fun, too. If you've ever walked into a room and there are two people in the room and you didn't see an argument and you didn't hear an argument, but you can tell you walked into the middle of an argument, you understand that you can feel things about other people. You don't may not know how you feel it. Researchers are discovering that what they call the second brain, the enteric brain, is in our intestinal tract. And there are sensory organs there that are very much like synapses in our brain. And they still haven't figured out exactly how they work, but you know how you have a gut feeling? Yeah. I'm guessing they're going to discover those synapses help us understand the world around us from an emotional standpoint. So that animals helped me with that a lot. And Bonnie taught me a huge lesson that day.
Well, that's such an incredible, it's just incredible to me how much we still don't know about the subconscious brain.
Yeah.
And I want to very quickly give a shout out to all the folks that have joined us, not only on Facebook Live, but also here in the Zoom room. We've got Johnny Lloyd and Associates, incredible, incredible guest on the show. We've got Dr. Vi, Ron Williams, Pagin. We miss you on this side of the show. And Valencia Giz, and just so many people, so many friends. And if you could just share, I mean, there's an event that we usually get together to meet friends, like-minded friends. If you could talk a little bit about that annual meeting and how other folks could be part of what we're so excited about.
Absolutely, Galen. And it's interesting that I am talking about it today and not one of our other co-hosts, because my annual meeting actually starts today. As soon as this program is over, I will be joining my Palm Beach Life Planners mastermind group on the island for a day of reviewing our life in writing. And so what I'd like to challenge each of you who are listening to think about this. You are on the treadmill of life, 365 days. Before you started this year, there were some things that you said you wanted to do or to be or to have. For example, we mastermind in 10 areas of our lives as a part of the International Mastermind Association. Our spiritual, our family, our faith, finances, which is type of faith, finances, your health, your personal development, your business, or if you could call it your career, your recreation, creativity, civic, and I am missing one. I'm not sure which one it is. I mean, it's 10 areas. But if you think about whatever you said in the beginning of the year, whatever that was, education was the 10th one, my apologies. But whatever you said in the beginning of the year, before you get to the end of the year, have you stopped and looked at every single thing you said in writing to determine how are you doing? Now, I always like to suggest that before you go into the next year, January, that you have to go before a tribe and a tribunal. And that tribunal gets to decide whether or not you will enter the new year
based upon what you said you were going to do in the last year. And if you didn't do what you said, now nobody's going to give you the goals. Those are up to you. But based upon what you said you were going to do, that will determine if you are able to enter into the new year, figuratively speaking, to get another 365 days. And so this is the first time we've been doing this now. Well, I've been doing it now since 1980, started with myself and then my mastermind group, and now it's grown. We've had as many as a couple hundred people to actually come to the hotel. And this next year, 2021, January the 8th, we start with the reception. And then on Saturday, January 9th, 2021, we will be at the Embassy Suites Hotel in Boca Raton. Yes, we will be in that space. We enlarged the space so we can have our mask and we can have the separation that's required. I don't want to take an excuse from anybody on why you didn't do whatever you said you were going to do. And we will be holding you accountable. Actually, you do have to submit your report at the door. Yes, we give you a form to complete, and you must complete that form before you enter if this is your first time. But if you go ahead and register early, there are some exercises that you can do before you come. My whole point in sharing all of this is the fact that you are the corporation of your life. You are it, Inc., your name, Inc. And just imagine if your shareholders get to decide whether or not they're going to invest in you based upon your quarterly returns. Your quarterly returns relate to whatever you said you were going to do and whether or not you did it to the best of your ability. So, Galen, I'm very excited today, like I said, because today, even though it's October 24th, our Promised Life Center Mastermind Group, we're sitting down today in preparation for January, and we're going over every single line together as a group and holding each other accountable, but also we're supporting each other as masterminders to help each other finish out the year very strong. So thank you, and then we look forward to seeing everybody. Just go to Eventbrite or internationalmasterminders.com and register. And I'd like to turn over to Sandy Weaver because as we were prepping, she shared something that I think was very encouraging for all of us. So may I, Galen, have her you can go ahead, Galen, and ask her that question.
Yeah, Sandy, you talked about the annual meeting and your plans for attending. So
I am here at this mastermind almost every Saturday morning. If I'm not out judging a dog show or doing something else that keeps me from being able to be here, I am here every Saturday morning. And I've had my ticket to the
Well, it's definitely worthwhile. Thank you so much for attending. That's how we find and connect with like-minded folks that are on this journey with us. So I'd love to go around to everyone and just, what are some key ahas that you got from this conversation, and how can Peter, we'll start with you. How can folks get a hold of you if they want to get more of your insight and connect with you personally and professionally?
Yeah, Galen, good stuff today. Sandy, wow. Here's some takeaways, Sandy. This one stuck out when you said it. Canine musical freestyle. Don't know what that's about, but it just jumped out at me, so I had to write it down. It's interesting. But some other things that you had mentioned, we have a tendency to sweep under the rug things that we've heard since our childhood, right? And we don't address them. And what I also heard from you, Sandy, is that we need to pay more attention to some of those things so that we can address them and reframe our subconscious mind. So thank you so much for even sharing about your journey and how that's so applicable as well. A little bit about me, to reach me, you can find me on any social media platform at Dr. Peter A. James. That's at DrPeterAJames. I am the high performance coach helping you to shift your mindset. Back to you, Galen.
All right. Ursula, what are some key things that you captured from this conversation? How can folks get a hold of you?
Just as Ann said, it's too much. I'm thinking about all of these wonderful things that she said. And I connect on an emotional level because she talked about the animals and connecting to the source and meditation. And these are things that I will go back and revisit and see, do a personal deep dive. But what I thought was funny was the committee in the back of the head. That was too funny. And I think I know where I've seen you before. We talked about that before. I probably have seen some of those dog shows that you judge, because I watch them whenever they come across.
Oh,
and yeah, and my favorite moment of joy is seeing the boxer that that was supposed to go to its owner, and he then went charging across the floor and spin around. And I had a boxer, so I know what that joy is like. They are so happy. I even said to a person, when you spin around like that, then I know that you really like me.
Yep.
But anyway, it's been wonderful. You can reach me from sulutu.com. I have a YouTube channel that I mentioned earlier where I'm putting up some of these stories that I like to tell. And one happens to be Wisdom and Young Legends and Life Lessons for You from Sulutu. And we make old and new in everything we do by capturing the stories and putting them in various places for you to enjoy.
Well, thank you. Miss Ann, what are some ahas that you've captured here, and how can folks get a hold of you?
The big one for me was the story about the synapse and also the clumsy. And meditation. Just so many confirmations to just continue to do the work. Listen, Sandy, you have to come back. That's all I can say. Because connecting the subconscious mind to infinite intelligence is an entirely different conversation.
Yeah.
And so we have lots to talk about, and we're going to find some other platforms to do that too. But you can reach me at annmcneil.com. I am the master wealth builder, helping to build wealthier businesses and lives. Thank you.
All right. Sandy, this has been an incredible, incredible conversation, and I know that this is really kind of leaning on not only your expertise as a happiness expert and an author, but we've also talked about your experience as a professional pooper scooper. So share any key ahas that you may have captured from the conversation, and how people can get a hold of you if they want to connect live.
Thanks, Galen. My key aha today was just another reinforcement of how awesome all of you are. I mean, anytime you're watching a show like this and you can hear quotes from people as diverse as Viktor Frankl and Shakespeare, and they're on target and on topic, that's pretty awesome. And it tells you that you're dealing with some very, very good thinkers. So y'all, your brains are working. You're doing great. And I just have had such a good time being part of this morning, and hope to have made people think differently about some of the beliefs that are inside their heads, and maybe get that voice to say nicer things to them. I have one of the things we talked about was meditation. And meditation, if you want to start meditating, can be a very difficult habit to get into. And so guided meditations are a really great way to go. And I have free guided meditations in my success store. So hit www.centerforworkplacehappiness.com/store and just download the free guided meditations and get started. They will help you make that little voice shut up and harness the committee in the back of your head, which really wants to help you get it right.
Well, fantastic. I'm definitely going to download that, because we can all use help from time to time. And that committee usually works overtime for most of us.
Yeah.
So thank you for the conversation. My name is Galen Bingham. I'm the leadership strategist, CEO of Kill Global Coaching and Consulting. Please reach out to me if you believe I can help you crush your most important goals. I am in the process of starting and launching season 4 of the Leadership Toolbox podcast. So definitely go wherever you consume podcasts, download the Leadership Toolbox, get caught up on the first 3 seasons, and get ready for season 4. Usually when I host, when I get the opportunity to host, I like to leave with a quote. This time I want to read specifically from the words of Napoleon Hill. And this is actually on page 212. And I think it really does tie specifically to this conversation. He says at the very top, you cannot entirely control your subconscious mind, but you can voluntarily hand over to it any plan, desire, or purpose which you wish to transformed into a concrete form. We have a responsibility to make sure that we are doing those things that are consistent with our desires. That it's our responsibility. And that means that if you're not achieving the kinds of successes in your life, there's no one else to blame. You've got that responsibility. Not only do you have the responsibility, you have the tools. Science gives you those tools. As you heard from Sandy today, not only does science give you those tools, but Napoleon Hill has been talking about those tools since 1937. So any excuse that you might have for why you can't take control over your life, they really stand on a feeble foundation. So with that, I'm going to encourage you to tune in to us every week, every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. Central, as we go through the principles of Think and Grow Rich, written by Napoleon Hill. My name is Galen Bingham, and I am going to encourage everyone until next time to think and grow rich. Take care.
Goodbye.